This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, it's Frigid Tuesday here in the United States. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 7th, 2014, episode 822. This episode brought to you by Equus Now. Good morning, horse world.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
Only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as a life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this very cold Tuesday morning here in the United States. We appreciate you being here. Jamie will be back with us tomorrow on Wednesday. Hopefully, she will be better and able to speak again and be able to join us back here on the show tomorrow. Usually, this is a special episode brought to you by Equus Now, where we talk about retail. Well, the fine folks at Equus Now had other things going and were away today, so we have a special episode planned for you where we get more in depth and we talk a lot about the Southern Equine Expo, which is coming up here in February and is in Tennessee. So we have a bunch of guests on.
I just love a reason to go get a horse fix without having to put on mittens and a parka.
I know.
I love that.
Although in Tennessee today, as we're going to learn from some of our listeners, you might have to put on a parka. But hopefully in February it'll be much warmer for the Southern Equine Expo. We're going to speak to Patrick Kaiser, who's the organizer of that and the creator of it, here very shortly. And then we have a bunch of guests coming on, including clinician Dick Piper, who's a legend in the AQHA and the cutting horse world, and then also Heather Johnson, who is one of the top female reiners in the country. So we have a whole bunch of guests planned for you today. And then later on in the show, we're going to do a replay of the interview that we did with Jim Wilson, producer and director of the new movie coming out, 50 to 1, Oscar winner Jim Wilson. And Jennifer edited it and put a little, you did some extras, didn't you? It's like buying the DVD where you get the extras.
That's right. It's the editor's cut.
That's right. So if you heard it last week, we're going to replay that at 10 o'clock. You might want to listen again to Jennifer's edited cuts here. And if you don't want to, then you can bail out on us at 10 o'clock and join us here again tomorrow.
No. You cannot bail out. No.
All right. You have to stay, Jennifer said.
That's right. Stay it in.
Put a lot of work into this.
That's
right. Stay
and
make sure you listen to everything she said she put into it. But that's what's coming up on today's show. Now, this morning I asked on Facebook, got a ton of comments too, but I asked on Facebook what everybody's temperatures were waking up this morning and how they were taking care of their horses, and I'll give you a few here. We have Chelsea is in Columbus, Ohio, and she said it's minus 10, feels like minus 25, lots and lots of blankets and hay to keep the ponies happy. Kayla chimed in the Aiken area, Aiken, South Carolina. She said, we came down to Aiken area to escape the cold. It's 10 degrees and feels like zero. Burr, going down to check the ponies now. Yeah, so all those people that moved to Aiken, you didn't move far enough south, just saying. Chantilly, I think is her name, minus 26 with minus 39 wind chill in southwest Ontario, Canada this morning. Everything is frozen, so lots of extra work. That is one thing about this type of weather is it does create a ton of extra work. And you're cold, so the last thing you want is to be having extra work while you're outside. Breaking out water buckets if you don't have
everything. Everything has to happen two or three times.
Yeah, it's just, you have to refill the water buckets 20 times a day. If you don't have heaters, just a pain. Becky said, minus 20 with a wind chill of minus 30 in Minnesota. My horse is boarded, but checked with one of the staff last night, and everybody is good. Lots of hay available. On the bright side, by the weekend, it's supposed to be 30 above. You know, it's been cold. You know it's been cold because most people will just say it's 30 degrees, it's 40 degrees. When they start saying 30 above, that means it's been below for a long time, because you want to clarify that. Shelley in southwest Iowa says minus 3, but I'm told no wind, which is huge improvement. Night before last, it was so cold, Scamper opened and closed the stall door to get inside. Last two nights, they've been in the barn and then turn them out during the day. Let's continue on here. We have Manitoba, Canada, which is always freaking cold. This morning, it is minus 32 with a wind that feels like minus 45.
Oh, dear. Even
yeah,
for Manitoba, said, that's chilly.
I know. It's just move. Horses are frisky during the morning feed time. Well, no kidding. I think I would be, too, at about minus 45. You have a right to be frisky at minus 45.
Yeah.
Even in North Carolina, Janelle says it's 6 degrees. The wind chill brought the overnight temperature down below zero, and she said the horses are doing fine. Lots of blankets and lots of hay. See, everybody listened to our show last week where we were told give them lots of hay.
That's right. We gave ours extra hay yesterday. As a matter of fact, we gave them so much hay they stuffed themselves and stopped eating.
I know. For my pony, that is very unusual to actually stop eating at some point. Yeah. Very unusual. Southeast Iowa, air temperature is minus 10, feels like minus 21. And she said the high today is supposed to be plus 8. Well, you're going to have a warm spell, be able to take the blankets off.
Let's hear it for positive digits. Woohoo!
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to have any trouble at all out there in Iowa today. In Ohio, Dawn Bean says minus 5, feels like minus 20. Horses are coping well with blankets, lots of hay and water. Also, plenty of awesome fellow boarders. They are taking turns going out and checking on the ponies. It is always nice when you have a bunch of people at a barn and they all get along well and everybody can help out. That is always nice.
Yep. Everybody can keep an eye on
it. We have Lorraine, one of our friends from New Jersey, checking in. 3 degrees in New Jersey. It was the first morning in years that both horses did not come to the gate to greet me and my fiancé. They were at the run-in, and as soon as the stall doors were opened, they went in and wouldn't come out. So, I don't blame them. Our friend Jen, whose daughter is a host here on one of our shows, Blaze Kids Radio, said 4 degrees in Pennsylvania, feels like minus 23. And the minis are staying in with blankets. And I've seen pictures of her minis, and you don't even need blankets. Those minis have been just fine. They have so much hair. Oh, just so much hair. And then yesterday,
yeah.
Do you remember Lisa won the award for having the coldest yesterday? She's up in Minnesota. And she says, not amused by this blast of cold Arctic air. All horses at my trainers were brought inside the last two nights and will be in again tonight. It's minus 11 with a minus 31 wind chill. And yesterday, do you remember she was minus 25? Real temperature?
Hey, warming right up now. You know,
yeah,
I think my least favorite part, the part that I always found most irritating about this kind of weather, because when we lived up north, we lived through these two. The worst part is our horses always lived outdoors for the most part. They had stalls, et cetera, but they pretty much lived out a lot. And when the weather got this bad, because we did not have run-in sheds in each and every pasture, we would bring them in the barn so they could get it out of the wind. And I despised having to clean all of those stalls for all of those horses because the poop was either frozen to the ground or the horses were just stirring it into a giant, soupy, disgusting mess. I despised that. Because the last thing you wanted to be doing was be out there cleaning the stall and trudging back and forth to the manure pile through the snow and the ice and the wind. That really sucked. Yeah.
I know. I agree. Just everything's harder when it's that cold. It just makes it all harder.
I know you hate the water buckets because you have a love-hate relationship with those.
Yeah, I hated the water buckets. We didn't have water heaters, so we had these big ice mounds that we built. We built with the ice that's in the shape of water buckets after you pour them out. we used to build mountains with them, and it was kind of cool. That was kind of fun. Uta, who called in yesterday and from Ohio, says barn thermometer was at minus 18, and the winds are howling like crazy. News station said the wind chill was minus 38. The horses seem to be doing better than I am. It's painful to be outside. Isn't that the truth? That's usually what happens also, is that the horses end up being better off than you are. And then one more, Augusta, Georgia, where it's usually pretty warm, says it's 12 degrees with a wind chill minus 2, gave the horses the biggest round bale I could find so that they would stay warm. So there you go. There's a lot of people checking in from around the country. I don't have time to get to all of them, but thought I'd give you a sampling of what is going on around the country. Now, the couple news stories here before we get to our first guest today. Speaking of all of our friends in New Jersey who listen to the show, we know there's a lot of you because you call in a lot and play the games with us. I didn't realize that there's actually, get this, everybody, there's actually a sales tax on rented stalls in New Jersey. And there, I read this article by Nancy Jaffer, who's been on the show before for the Star Ledger. And she said that, you know, apparently you're supposed to be charging 7% sales tax on every stall you rent in New Jersey. Now, not a lot of people do, and a lot of people don't know about it and or just totally ignore it. But it comes under this bizarre act that regulates storage. And it, you know, I really meant storage units is what it was talking about. But the Bizarre Act talked about regulating and taxing storage facilities. Well, they stretched it to include horse stalls as a storage facility. Well, and I guess if you really think about it, putting a horse in a stall could be considered storage, although I think that is stretching it. But there's legislation right now, Congressman Ron Dancer, and the son of harness racing great Stanley Dancer has introduced a bill in the state legislature to try and get that particular part of that act taken back. But, you know, it's really incredible. And what they've been doing is they're starting to enforce this now where they never did in the past. So they're going back and they're going to these farms wherever they find boarding facilities. They went to this one guy's house. He had no idea he was supposed to be charging tax on board. And they went back all the years he's been charging tax, and he owed over $20,000. They have now taxed him over $20,000 for all the back fees for the years that he wasn't charging his 7% sales tax. Well, he started charging the tax. He had to raise his board a little bit, started charging the tax, and a bunch of people left to go to barns that weren't charging the tax because it's so haphazard how they're enforcing it. So What a bizarre situation you guys have there in New Jersey as far as your tax is concerned. Oh, by the way, if you have a breeding operation or a racing operation, as long as you're not boarding, then you don't have to pay the tax. So that's one of the exceptions to the thing, because then it doesn't fall under the storage tax, which is just totally bizarre. So that's what's going on over there in New Jersey as far as taxation is concerned. And we are right now going to go to our first guest who's going to stay with us for a little while here, because he is Patrick Kaiser of Peak Equine Productions, creator of Southern Equine Expo. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you this morning?
All right. We just did a round of finding out how the temperature was from all of our listeners around the country, and we learned that even where you are in Tennessee, it's pretty chilly.
Yeah, it was 3 degrees this morning. Broke about an inch of ice off the water tanks. That's the most ice I've had to break since I've left Lincoln, Nebraska. So things were a little chilly this morning, but the wind's not blowing and the horses were actually out moving around. Hey, I listened to your show early in this morning, everybody's feeding hay. Just as a side tip, make sure they got plenty of water, because that's one thing that during the cold weather they need to have access to open water. And when it's freezing cold and we don't feel like breaking water tanks, it is still important to do, but I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yes, definitely, definitely important to do. Well, you know, usually when you have your expo in February, by the way, the Southern Equine Expo is coming up at the Tennessee Miller Coliseum in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, February 14th through the 16th. Usually I imagine it's not this cold.
No, usually we have our blast of winter here in January in Tennessee, and things start warming up pretty nicely. We'll even get into the 50s and 60s, and there might be an occasional 70-degree day in February. And so that's kind of one of the reasons why we're looking forward to February. It should be a lot warmer at that time.
Well, that's a good reason for people to head down from Kentucky and from Ohio and Virginia and West Virginia to the Expo, because it's going to be just a heck of a lot warmer there.
Well, I would think so. And then the other thing is, you know, it's a good way to take some good information back home. And while your horses are still pretty hairy and you can't get outside and ride, you can kind of start practicing. We're going to have a lot of groundwork demonstrations. You can do a lot of that before the trails open up.
Now, how long has the Southern Equine Expo been going on?
Well, there is a history of having expos in Tennessee. Years ago, they did have the Volunteer Horse Fair, and it was very successful. And about 7 years ago, they had their last one here in Tennessee, and that was about the time Road to the Horse moved into Murfreesboro. Since then, Tootie moved the Road to the Horse to Lexington, Kentucky, and so last year we started up the Southern Horse Bonanza, and that was our first year as this group coming together and putting something on. We changed the name this year to Southern Equine Expo. We felt like we spent a lot of time selling the name last year, kind of explaining what Horse Bonanza meant. So we wanted our title to be a little more descriptive, and so we changed the name to Southern Equine Expo, and this will be our second year.
Now, is this the same facility that Tootie did Road to the Horse in?
It is. Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Yep. And by the way, just as a programming note, here on the Horse Radio Network, Tootie Bland will be on the Stable Scoop radio show with us this week talking about Road to the Horse. And we are an official media partner, radio partner for Road to the Horse this year. Now, Southern Equine Expo, you have a lot of things going on. Tell us a little bit about all the different things that are going to be happening there.
Well, we're going to be centered on our clinicians, and education is always the paramount importance of these expos. So we bring
well
in
that
Chris
and shopping, that and shopping, Patrick.
And shopping. Yes, that's true. That's true. And that is a good point, Glenn, because I want all the guys to understand that it is over Valentine's Day weekend, and there will be a lot of bling for sale at the expo. And it is a good time to buy your sweetheart something that she needs to wear or for the barn. So it is a win-win for all the guys to bring their friends to the expo. But so with that being said, there's going to be plenty of shopping. There will be our clinicians. We brought in a lot of different clinicians representing a lot of different disciplines and breeds, anything from Chris Cox, which everybody is familiar with as a three-time undefeated champion of Road to the Horse, as we mentioned. Dick Pieper, who will be on in a few minutes, is one of the godfathers of reining and cutting, and is just a wealth of knowledge as a horseman, and doesn't work on trying to cram them into a box, lets the horse tell them when they're ready. Lisa Wasaki for equine behavior and a lot of how the horses think and perceives their information, their surroundings, which is awesome because, you know, sometimes we try to put our human thoughts into the horse, but sometimes we need to back off and think about how the horse is thinking, seeing things, as opposed to the way we perceive it. And
hey, Patrick,
Patrick,
before you go on, Lisa Wysocki, just wanted to mention the listeners of the morning show here will be familiar with Lisa. She has co-hosted this show, filled in for Jamie at times. And also in her last book, she's written a number of books, and in her last book, she featured Horses in the Morning. We were in her last book, so it's going to be good to have Lisa there. She's a good girl. We really like her.
Glenn, that last book was actually was centered at the Tennessee Miller Coliseum where the expo is going to be held.
That's right.
Wow.
That is right.
That
you
is
can
right.
go
and
live
that,
the book. Wow. Between Horses in the Morning and the stadium, you can go live the book.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because we have worked with Lisa, and we are having a Magnum Equation clue contest so that if you come there, you go to Lisa's booth and you pick up a sheet with clues, and there will be great awards. You've got to find out where the medallion's hidden, and we're kind of working out a little bit of the details, but Lisa's group is really working hard on this, and we are actually going to have a mystery contest with this year's expo in honor of the Magnum Equation being written about the Coliseum. So we're trying to have a little bit of fun, too. It's not all just classroom education, obviously.
Well, terrific.
Yeah, and we're bringing in Tammy Crawford from Versailles. She is she's qualified for the Olympic trials in 2004, and a local from College Grove, Tennessee, and just a very fun and knowledgeable person. Liz Johnson is going to feature center riding. Mike Tukaruk is going to go over fences and work in hunters and jumpers. Jack Brainerd for Western Versailles. We're glad to have Jack come in. He's 92 or 93 years old. I think
Whoa.
He's having a birthday somewhere right around our expo. And we are really looking forward to having him. You know, he's published a lot of the original articles on cowboy dressage. So Jack will be a wealth of knowledge. And it's just, we're trying to combine, you know, a lot of different people again. Charlene Carter will be talking about getting her horses ready for the show pen for those people that want to do shows and have horses that they take down and try to win a ribbon. Her clients and customers have always looked pristine in the ring, so we're looking forward to her sharing her information. And we will have a blacksmith competition this year. We're working with the Music City Farriers Association. We're going to have a blacksmithing contest going on because I think a lot of people don't understand or have not witnessed the art of making a horseshoe out of a straight piece of iron. So that's going to be going on and adding to the excitement along with the colt breaking with Chase Dodd and Mark and Miranda Lyon doing some more of the vaquero training. And, you know, Joe Harper will be there with the working cow horse, and Joe's a good trainer from Russell Springs, Kentucky, who is one of the best in explaining how to do things and very good with novice and amateurs in training. So we've got a whole list of people, and you'll have Heather Johnson on that has won the Congress Freestyle a couple times. So, you know, we're pretty proud of our clinician lineup. We're proud of our the competitions we're going to have and demonstrations throughout. And, again, the shopping will be good.
Well, that's you know, every time I don't bring that up, Jennifer and Jamie and all of the female co-hosts on the shows remind me. See, so I've learned now. I've been trained to make sure we bring up shopping because we tend to have different priorities than they do. But speaking of which, though, you know, one of the things that you could not do, and we're going to speak to a couple of those clinicians as a reminder here. We're going to be speaking to Dick. Is it Pieper? Dick Pieper, and we're also going to be speaking to Heather Johnson here in just a little bit. But, you know, you couldn't put on these shows, just like we can't put on our radio shows without sponsors. And one of your terrific sponsors this year, and we met them at the World Equestrian Games, actually, and that's Tartar. So tell us a little bit about Tartar, and we have somebody here from Tartar as well.
Well, I'll let Kayla do the talking about what they're about, but I thought when we went out and we were looking for sponsors, we wanted to look for people that kind of fit what we are about. And Tartar from up in Liberty, Kentucky, was easy to find because, you know, they do things right. They build quality horse equipment. If you've seen their videos, their YouTube videos, they show you how tough they are and they can stand up to a good beating. And we all know that horses can tear things up pretty easily. But they've got good quality equipment, and they're trying to do things right, and they seem to have the same values that we do. So when I approached them, they were quick to get on board, and we really appreciate their working with them this year. But I'll let them tell you about what they've got going on right now. But it is a good fit for us, and you're right. Our sponsors are awesome, and they're the ones that are helping us make this go.
Hey, Kayla, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for joining us. As I said, we met you guys at the World Equestrian Games is when we first ran into Tartar. And to be honest, at that point, I had no idea what you did. You know, when you come from what you know, and I you've heard that before. I'm not the first one to say that. But, you know, it when you come from the horse side of things and not necessarily the farming side of things, and with what you guys do, we don't always, you know, correlate two and two and put two and two together. But I think since the World Equestrian Games, I've been seeing your name more often, and I've been seeing it out there more on the horse side. So tell us a little bit, and I got to ask you before we get started. I read that you guys have 1 million square feet of production facilities.
There's a lot.
Wow.
There's a lot. We are located in a small town in Dunnville, Kentucky, which is 75 miles south of Lexington from the horse park, and pretty much the whole town consists of tartar. There's we make several different types of products, from, you know, equine to cattle handling to 3-point to ATV to your basic gates, water tanks. So pretty much the town is consisted of tartar as well as employed by tartar. So and I think sometimes what has happened is tartar makes so many different products as well as private labeling products for other companies. The name itself has kind of gotten lost, and you know, really you don't think about when you're driving down the road and someone has a new shiny red gate up, you just notice that the gate's red and it's pretty. You really don't, you know, take a look at the name on it like you would a nice pair of Justin boots.
Right, exactly. Well, that, and I think that's right. I think that's exactly why I hadn't heard of it before. You mentioned you do water tubs. I sure hope you do heated ones, because everybody could use that right about this morning.
Yeah, for sure. We do. We have automatic waters, of course, that are heated. And we also have gotten into making the galvanized waters, which, you know, you can, of course, just a tank de-icer in. But the company's been in the business since the 40s. It's family owned, still up to this day. The family is very active with the company. And so that's where we joined with Patrick, you know, with horse expos or cattle expos or, you know, farming equipment. We try to involve ourselves with those guys, and you know, that's where friends are made, and great relationships are established, and that gives Tartar the opportunity to come and listen to, you know, our customers, people who is going to be purchasing our product, and it allows us to listen to what people need, what they want. It allows us to kind of, you know, kind of see the future. I mean, you know, it's like whenever, you know, feeding animals, you know, used to you had a hay ring and you threw your cattle or your horses out hay, and, you know, now we make feeders that allows us to save that hay that is easily wasted, you know, especially when they give that stuff away anymore.
Well, you know, and
but, you know, some
right.
things, yeah,
especially here in Florida, I mean, we're paying a fortune for our hay, and I know you guys the round bale. You know, down here, they'll sleep on it because they eat it, you know, a little bit slower than they would up north. So the round bale feeders are so nice because it just keeps the horses from wasting so much of it. And I know you guys
wasting
do a lot of that.
Wasting and safety, you know. It's the key deal that you have to look at. And so, again, coming to the expos, it's some things that we've come out with, you know, they're meant not to never be changed. It works great, leave it alone. But there are things that over time that, you know, we as horse owners have you know, Patrick was speaking earlier about a gentleman, you know, sometimes what we have done is we try to take that horse and make him fit into how we think things should go. And we can't always do that. Sometimes we got to put ourselves into the horse's mind, and the horse's body language is, you know, his everyday life. And so, you know, with that being said, we stuck some feeders in our stalls, and we placed them up high because, you know, we think the horse is tall. That's how he should eat. When basically we forgot that the good man put those animals on earth to eat with their heads down in a natural position. And so, again, you know, these expos have allowed us to come and been a horse owner myself to listen to people, you know, problems that they're having with their horses. And it allows us to keep up with the Joneses, per se, on product for our livestock. You know, they're not only our livestock, they're our family. You know, they're our best friends. I just had a mare that I had to say goodbye to a few days ago. And you know, you go every mile with keeping that animal's health and safety first.
Well, now, and you're in one of the only places that sells pink gates, pink corral gates. Where else can you get a pink corral gate?
Nowhere. Nowhere but Tartar Farm and Ranch. You go to tartarusa.com.
That's right. Yep. That's where I found
Sadie
it, actually.
Lynn. Yeah. With the All-American Cowgirl Chick, she gave us the idea, Luann Tartar, who is one of the owners here, wanted to support those girls. Get on the internet. You can look at All-American Cowgirl Chicks. They
and they've been on our
show. At the
they've been on our shows 100 times. We love them.
Oh, they're awesome. You know, you'll never hear a bad word said about those girls. What they stand for, what they believe in is genuine.
Yeah, they're terrific, and we just spoke to them actually right before they headed out. They're always in the Rose Parade, and we just spoke to them before they headed out for the Rose Parade this year. And they were one of the last, as we were watching the Rose Parade, I kept saying, "Where are the cowgirls?" And they were one of the last equestrian groups there. I mean, they were at the very end. They had to wait a long time on that road for that parade to start for them. So, yeah, I did. Where else are you going to get a pink gate than Tartar? Well, now, we really appreciate you joining us this morning. It is tartarusa.com. It's tartarusa.com. And I wanted to thank you guys, too, because I know you do support expos. We run into you many times. And that's so important because these things wouldn't happen without the big corporate sponsors like you guys. You know, am I right, Patrick? You can't charge enough to individual ticket holders and still have them come if you didn't have these big corporate sponsors.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, one thing that Tartar being on board with us this year is we're able to invest a lot in advertising to try to get people to understand, you know, in our second year, not a lot of people know about us yet. We're not a household name such as the Road to the Horse or Equine Affair, some of the bigger expos. So, and we're trying to get to a spot where we can fit, and Tartar's allowing us to do that. And so we do appreciate that. And, you know, we wouldn't have the capital to do that because, as we all know, you know, it's hard to get public funding for any of these type of things in the horse industry because they don't really fit one niche or another. They're not a food animal, and they're not really a companion animal. So it's hard to get grants and funding for this on the government side. So private and corporate sponsors are the only way we can do this and get our name out there. So we do appreciate it.
Well, Kayla, thank you so much for joining us. We really thank you for being here, and good luck at the expo.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Well, that was Kayla. She is from – yeah.
Oh, sorry. You need to go on to Tartar's website and watch how they product test. I'm just kind of disappointed that they haven't had me up there yet to blow some things up and test the durability of the products because I think they just have too much. They just build things to see if they can tear them apart, and they can't, and so then they put them on the market. So they're good. But if I could real quick before we leave, I really want to mention some of my other sponsors too, the Mustang Leadership Partners. The Department of Ag, Tennessee Department of Ag has come on board this year. We're happy to have them. Farina is coming back again in Land O'Lakes, so that they've been a firm believer in us. And Horseman's Hoof Beats Magazine and the Jekyll Center has a – Thompson Station, Tennessee, is a local barn that has set up some horse rehabilitation with their Performex, and so we're really pleased to have them come back again. But,
terrific!
Like we can do it without them.
Can you stay with us for our guests coming up here?
You bet.
All right. Well, hold on one second. We're going to be hearing from the first guest, Dick Pieper, here in a second. But first, we have to hear from one of our sponsors that make this show possible. And our title sponsor today is Equus Now. We'll be right back with one of our first guests.
The Equus Now consignment shop is famous not only in Central Ohio, but around the country. With over 5,000 square feet of storage space and an entire dedicated section of the EquusNow.com website devoted entirely to used tack and apparel, the EquusNow Consignment Shop is a dream come true. If you're looking for quality used items, you can be confident in shopping with EquusNow because they take care to accept only the best, gently used tack and apparel and then price them at the best prices. If you have tack and equipment laying around that you never use and could use some extra cash, and who couldn't, Equus Now will sell them for you, even if you don't live in Central Ohio. Simply download the forms from equusnow.com, fill them out, and ship your sparkling clean, gently used items to Equus Now. They'll get your stuff sold fast. So stop by today at equusnow.com.
And, of course, you can find Equus Now on Facebook. Just search for Equus Now, and we'll look forward to having them back in future months with more of the special retail episodes that we have done in the past. Well, our next guest, his name is Dick Pieper. He is the past president of the National Reining Horse Association, the Futurity Champion, and member of the Hall of Fame. He is an American Quarter Horse Association professional horseman, multiple world champion, and has held judges' cards in the NRHA, the AQHA, the National Cutting Horse Association, the National Rain Cow Horse Association, and he also sits on the board of directors for both the Ranch Horse Association of America and the American Stock Horse Association. And, Dick, I'm worn out just giving your description here. You've got to be tired just doing all this stuff.
Well, I've been doing it a long time. That's the only thing.
Well, it's so good to have you on. I'm glad that you could join us on this chilly morning. Now, where are you located?
I'm in Marietta, Oklahoma.
And it's a little chilly there this morning, too, I bet.
Well, it is. It was 17. 17 this morning.
Wow,
so
you're warm compared to...
It's a little chilly out here also.
Yeah, you're warm compared to a lot of the country. You don't have
exactly.
A minus in front of that.
Yeah, I know. We're a little bit pretty happy about that too.
Well, now tell us. Obviously, your love has been on the reining side and in the futurity side of things, as well as with the AQHA. When you got your start, were horses something you wanted to make your life?
Absolutely. I was a college student at Ohio State University, and I took a horse sciences class. And, of course, I'd had horses at home and ridden horses my whole life up until that point. But when we took a field trip up to Dale Wilkinson's ranch at Findlay, Ohio, and I watched Dale ride some reining horses and some cutting horses, I decided right then and there that was what I was going to do for the rest of my life, and I've never deviated from that.
Now, you haven't always been, obviously, on the competition side. You also train horses, and you do a lot of things with equine behavior and performance and genetics and pedigrees and all that stuff. So, I assume the early years were really consumed with the competition side, and then all of this grew from that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's kind of a common metamorphosis. I started out training horses for a living and showing horses for a living, and then in 1987, my wife and I bought our place in Marietta, Oklahoma, and we were fortunate enough to run across a yearling colt at the time of the name of Texas Kicker, and I showed him, I made him a world champion in AQHA, and then we started breeding him. And it just kind of evolved from there. We a few years later bought Playgun, and Playgun was the NCHA Augusta Futurity Champion, both in the open and in the non-pro, and ended up placing in 19 major events, and was the highest earning cutting horse in his 4-year-old year, which would have been 1997. So that kind of led into the breeding, and so we've done a little bit of it all, actually.
Well, for those that don't know your name, they might recognize you have a series of training videos and clinics known as the Language of Horsemanship, so they might recognize that a bit. What makes there are a lot of clinicians out there, and I know when Patrick goes out and looks for clinicians for these shows, you're looking for certain things to fill certain niches. What makes what you do a little bit different than what others are doing out there?
Well, What I try to do is I try to communicate with horses in a way that they are able to understand. And I think when you, just for example, if you have to deal with people that speak a foreign language and don't speak your language, you have to find a way to communicate. And that's what I have done. A lot of people approach training as though they were kind of forcing the horse into doing what they wanted to do. They get on the horse, and every day is a little bit of a tussle and a little bit of a battle, and they feel they ultimately win, and they get the horse to kind of come along. But my approach has always been to try to communicate with that horse a little bit, to try to let him understand by breaking the lessons down into much smaller increments and teaching that horse what I want him to do without the struggle, and almost in a psychological type of way, get that horse to want to do what I want the horse to do.
Do you think that and I'm doing a generality here, it's something that we have seen, you know, in the years of doing these shows and watching a ton of shows across the country of all different disciplines, that, you know, one of the things that's happened is that we have teenagers now that are coming up that haven't necessarily had the horse experience. They come out, they take lessons, they don't really spend a whole lot of time with the horse. It's not their fault. They just don't have them in the backyard like we used to. So they're not growing up, you know, just getting on any time and really spending quality time with the horses. So what has tended to happen on the competition side is that we see the younger group, quote unquote, rushing the horses a little more than we maybe have in the past. Do you see that? Is that a general trend that you're familiar with on your side of the house?
Yes, I do see that quite a bit. And to put a little bit of a different twist on things, other than what you said, I think if you're going to ride a horse, you're going to teach this horse something, I don't think you can do it in half an hour or in 45 minutes. I don't think you can go take the horse out of the stall, saddle him up, lead him out to the arena, get on him, ride him for a half an hour, put him back in the stall, and do that three times a week. You get off work at 4:30 in the afternoon and you look at your watch and say, well, geez, I've got 20 minutes where I could ride before I got to meet Joe for cocktails or before I have to go to my tennis lesson. And so they go out there and they kind of halfway ride that horse, whereas I feel the way to really ride a horse and learn to communicate with this horse, you've got to get to know this horse pretty well, and you do that by getting on this horse, taking him on a little bit of a trail ride, taking him out in some open country, walk him, jog him, lope him, teach him how to go somewhere. Teach him how to go through the water. Teach him how to go up and down hills. Teach him how to get tied up somewhere. And then at the end of an hour or an hour and a half, bring him back to the arena, show him a couple things for about 15 minutes, and put him away. And I think that's a much better way to train a horse and lessen the pressure that you have to put on a horse. And the pressure is the thing that horses really try to avoid. The training that I like to do is in...
I try to avoid it too, though, Dick. It's not just the horses.
Well, exactly. Exactly. You know, that's a really good analogy. The training that I like to do is I like to ride a horse and put him in a little bit of a pressure situation, and the second that he responds and does what I want them to do, release that pressure, take the pressure away. And then that horse starts, when he feels that pressure coming, he knows how to get released from it. And so he's learned something, but he's learned it in a non-confrontational kind of way, as in terms of, you're going to do this or I'm going to ride you till you drop kind of thing. You see the difference?
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Well, you know, Patrick, you're back with us, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what will people see if they come on out to your clinic at the Southern Equine Expo next month?
Well, they're going to see a lot of difficult. Go ahead, Dick.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, there's going to be a lot of different clinics, but I think what Dick is describing in his training is really what is the theme of our whole expo is, you know, how do you communicate with your horse and how do you take the time to do things right so that you have a lasting relationship and that you don't, you know, wear this horse out or you don't get frustrated. Because the one thing Dick mentioned is, you know, he takes his horse on a trail ride, and I've been to his place in Marietta, and, I mean, you talk about a beautiful barn and a beautiful setting. You know, that's why Dick lives, that's why he's in such a good mood, is because he gets out and he rides his horse on some beautiful country, and it helps his mind and the young horse's mind. And I think that's what we got to remember is, you know, we got a lot of things that are pulling on us from every direction, and we got a lot of things that we can do with our discretionary income, and horses are expensive, as we all know, when we might as well enjoy them. And that's what we're here to do at the expo is help people learn a way to enjoy them. You know, nobody likes the crying kid in Walmart and the spoiled brat, and we don't want to have a horse like that either. So I think it's important that we're going to give them the tools and hopefully some nuggets of knowledge that they can go home and have that well-behaved kid at home where they can go trail ride, or if they're going to go in the show ring, they have an enjoyable day with the horse. So that's what we're going to do, and Dick's philosophy fits beautifully in what we're trying to teach at the expo.
Well, Dick, we've run out of time here. It's Piper Ranch or PeeperRanch.com, right? Is that the website?
That's correct. That's correct.
And that's spelled PIEPERRanch.com. And, of course, we'll put that in our show notes, and we'll also link to it on our Facebook page here at Horses in the Morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. We hope to have you back.
Thank you very much. I enjoy it very much, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care, Dick.
Bye-bye. It sounded like he was out working with the horses this morning, Patrick.
He lives it. He isn't just talking and preaching it, you know, or just going around. He lives it. You know, I call him up all the time, and I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm out here with a 2-year-old in the round pen or something." I mean, he is a true horseman, and he breaks it down and explains it very well, you know. And that's something that is hard to find sometimes. You know, there's a wealth of knowledge out there, and you just got to find the people that can explain it and make us understand it. And I think Dick does a nice job with that.
Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. I am here with Patrick from Southern Equine Expo. We're spending this whole hour talking about the expo and chatting with some of the clinicians. Our next one is going to be coming up here shortly. And, you know, that must be one of the things. You have a whole world of clinicians to pick from in the United States. So, you know, that kind of makes it fun for you to pick and choose who you want to get to the expo. And you know, as opposed to having to dig and not finding enough, you have plenty to choose from here. We have a ton of good clinicians in the United States.
Yes, we do. And, you know, the thing that I wanted to do and was our motivation in finding our clinicians and selecting them is we wanted to find horse people that have done it, you know, and that are out doing it and making a living, not just as clinicians going around and being a clinician, but people that have taken their horses and have competed with them or have used them to show and showcase their talents and have proven it. And the other thing is we looked at we talked about being able to communicate. You know, it's important to communicate with your horse, but as a clinician, they have to be able to communicate with the public. And that's why we also looked at horse trainers that have had history with amateurs and novice customers, so that we knew that if their customers have done well, that must mean that they are able to share and communicate and get across effectively what they're trying to teach the novices and the amateurs. So we had some criteria that we looked for when selecting our clinicians this year.
Well, that's a beautiful transition. You should be in radio because you lead us right into our next guest. Talk about a person that has done it. Heather Johnson began riding at the age of 7, and she is the head trainer at Creekside Reining Horses. Her showing and compliments include NRHA World and Reserve Championships, 10-time All-American Quarter Horse Congress champion, and 7-time reserve champion. So she definitely has done it, and one of my favorite things to watch, and that's freestyle reining. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And am I seeing on your Facebook page you have something else new and exciting in your life, too?
Yes, I have a 3-month-old baby boy.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Is this your first one?
He is, yeah. I've really enjoyed it. It's different than the horses, but, you know, the care of young creatures is all kind of the same. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, but one difference, Heather. My co-host normally for this show is not here this morning, has a 6-month-old. And there is one difference. The horses, you can tuck them in at night, and you really don't have to see them till morning. That ain't true with that baby horse.
Exactly. No, it's not. But I'm enjoying it. They grow out of that phase really quick.
Well, now, you have done a whole lot. How'd you get into reining? Was that something you wanted to do? Was reining always it, or did you start out with hunter jumpers?
Well, I actually started out on the AQHA all-around circuit, you know, did a little bit of everything, English, Western, jumping, trail, driving, the whole nine yards, and, you know, then, you know, started to kind of see the reining at some of the quarter horse shows and then went to a couple of reining shows and really got into it from there. And then after I had done that for a couple of years, I had to decide what I was going to specialize in because I was just running around like a crazy person and really couldn't get to both the AQHA shows and the NRHA shows.
Now, one of my favorite things, as I said, to watch, I was fortunate enough to, we had a radio show covering the World Equestrian Games, so we were there for all of it, is freestyle reining is one of my favorite things to watch. I like freestyle dressage, but freestyle reining, you guys just have more fun.
We do have a lot of fun, and I think that the crowd gets to have a lot of fun, too.
Well, you know, you get crazy. I mean, you guys do the weirdest things in freestyle reining, and I love it. The weirder, the better.
Yep. No, that's, you know, the freestyle is all about getting the crowd involved. You know, you want it to be, you know, just entertainment for everyone. It's got to be entertaining or you lose the crowd really quick. So people come up with some really crazy ideas.
Well, and let's talk about the other big difference between reining and all of the English sports is you actually win money.
Yes, that's always a good thing. You know, when the quarter horse circuit, you know, after a good weekend, you go home with a bunch of points. You know, maybe you've gotten qualified for the world show. You know, at a good reining show, you've at least made your money back, you know, if not more. And that's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. On the English side, you don't see that too often. Not
right.
Not often enough, at least. Maybe that'll change over time. Well, now, what are you going to be doing at the expo? What will people see when they come to watch you?
Well, we're going to start out talking about how you can apply some aspects of reining horse training to just about any discipline, just to help, you know, get your horse more broke. And then from there, we're going to move on and talk about how you finish off a show horse. You know, and what are some of the things that you can do to keep them fresh, you know, keep them from not getting sour in the pen. You know, we're just going to touch on several issues that you can have in the show pen, you know, so that people can start thinking about getting ready to gear back up and get to these horse shows.
I got to tell you, too, I think one of the misconceptions that people have is that you have to have a quarter horse to do reining. We were over the weekend at a little Renaissance fair here in Florida, and we met the guys from the War Horse Jousting Troop out of Sarasota, Florida. And all of the draft horses, big draft horses that they use for jousting down there, are first trained in reining and competed in reining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, so, you know, I really believe that the reining training is one of the best ways to get your horse really broke. And I've had many horses over the years that have gone on to do just about anything else, you know, after they've been a reining horse. And, you know, I just get rave reviews from people about how broke they are.
Patrick, why did you come upon Heather for helping out at the expo?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I didn't really, I wasn't traveling in the NRHA circles and I didn't know much about Heather, but my partner with the expo, Chase Dodd, who's one of our clinicians, and he's helped Heather with I think he breaks some 2-year-olds for Heather, and then she takes them on and finishes them. And he told me, he goes, she's got a lot of talent, and I think Heather will, I think she just moved to North Georgia not too long ago, and that's how he ran into her. She came in from Connecticut, so I'm sure she's happy about being out of that cold. But anyway, he told me about her, and I've judged some horse shows with her mother-in-law, Carolyn Johnson, and so I kind of started hearing the name Heather Johnson, and then I see, you know, I start going on YouTube and seeing this freestyle reining pattern with double knot your Reeboks, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, where have I been? You know, this lady's got a lot of talent. And I want to say one thing that she didn't mention that she'll be doing at our expo is on Saturday night we have a celebration of the champions, and Heather is going to be doing her freestyle reining routine. So we're really looking forward to seeing that live, so I don't have to go to YouTube anymore to see her. But so that's how Chase is the one who put me on to her, and he, you know, he just couldn't quit talking about how talented she was and everything that she did, and how much he learned from her every time he went down there and visited with her, and so it was pretty simple for us to sign her up. Last year we tried and she had a conflict. This year we're fortunate enough that she's got her calendar free, and we jumped on that pretty quick.
When you're, you know, I've talked to Heather, I've talked to a bunch of the dressage riders about how they prepare their freestyles. What goes into your mind? Is your freestyle a reflection of your horse's personality, that particular horse's personality, or your personality, or both?
Well, I think there's a couple things you need to consider with the freestyle. The biggest thing is that your music does need to match your horse to a certain degree. So if you have, you know, a short little horse with a quick stride, you might not want to do a really slow song with a slow beat because it's not going to match very well. And you want to make sure, you know, that your music is not, you really want to have something that the crowd can kind of sing along with. You know, if it's a song that no one's heard before, sometimes it can take, you know, half of the song before the crowd really, you know, kind of picks up on it. So I think having a song that has been heard before can be important as well. And I do think it should fit, you know, both you and your horse's personality. I believe that you either need to, you know, really get the crowd singing and dancing along with you, or you need to go the opposite way and, you know, you can have the really moving routines where, you know, you've got people crying in the crowds. And I think those are the best two types of freestyles. I think some people will get stuck with, like I said, a song that's not been heard very much or a song that doesn't match the horse.
Now, do you guys actually get professional help in putting the music together?
No, it's all done out in our arena by me, myself, and I.
Okay.
So, you know, it's and, you know, after all these years, it's fairly easy to put the routines together. You know, for someone that's starting out, for a non-pro that's maybe doing their first routine, you know, I do recommend working with a professional because they can point you in the right direction a lot quicker. But we don't necessarily have people that, you know, design these patterns like the dressage riders do.
Yeah, I mean, there's whole businesses revolving around that.
Right. Yeah, that's not how we operate. And I think that, you know, I tend to keep my patterns a little bit more fluid than maybe what some of the dressage patterns are. You know, I like to fit my pattern to the arena that I'm showing in. So, you know, for example, the pen at the Congress is actually pretty small, and if you have designed your routine in a bigger arena, you may have to add in a couple of things in order to use up your time in a smaller pen. So it's very important when you get to wherever you're showing and you do the warm-up, the practice for the freestyle, that you make sure that your music and your pattern fit the size arena that you're going to show in.
Well, this is terrific, and you can find the schedule for everything that's happening over at the Expo at what website, Patrick?
It's SouthernEquineExpo, all one word, .com. So it's SouthernEquineExpo.com.
And is the schedule for all the clinicians posted at this point, or is that coming up?
It will be up by the end of the week. Chase and I are actually meeting later today, and we're going to start laying everything out. We just needed to know what everybody was doing and how we're going to fit it all in. But it's going to be a jam-packed 3 days, I can tell you that. But we do start on Friday, February 14th. The doors open at 11, and we will start our clinics at noon. So, and then we will go all weekend. And there will be some. We got three arenas available, plus a demonstration and educational seminar area, along with our blacksmith farrier competition and a parade of breeds and a barn of for those horses, open to the public. And so there will be something going on everywhere on the Tennessee Miller Coliseum campus. So it should be a fun-filled weekend.
And the Saturday night deal, is that a separate ticketed event, or is that included?
No, it's included. It for one low fee, you know, if you buy your tickets online right now, they're only $9 for a single day admission,
wow.
$24 for the weekend. You know, you can't go see a movie for that anymore. And so that was one thing, big change that we made from last year, is we do want to be all inclusive to our horse community in the Southeast. And by lowering the ticket prices, we hope we can get people in the door, because there is so much wealth of information and the people that we're bringing in, that we just wanted to make sure that we could share it with everybody and nobody was turned away because they couldn't afford it or they thought they might have something else to do. So we enticed them. We put the carrot out in front of them with a low ticket price, and we want to get them in the door. And I think once they get in the door, they'll be glad they came, and we'll want to mark it on their calendar for
years. Heather, what do you have a website where people can find you?
Yes, it's creeksidereining.webs.com.
I think you broke up a little bit there. Can you say it again?
Yeah, it's creeksidereining.webs.com.
Okay, got it. Creekside Reining, you'll find her there, and you'll also see her at the expo. So thank you so much, Heather. We appreciate you being on this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care, Heather.
All right.
Patrick, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Again, the website is southernequineexpo.com. You can buy your discount tickets on $9. I mean, you can't get into anything for $9 anymore.
No.
That's ridiculously cheap. So, you know, find the weekend, February 14th through the 16th. Head on out to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You know what? You can hit Nashville for a little while and then head down to Murfreesboro. Either way, you can head to the expo first and then hit Nashville on the way back. One or the other.
That's right. It's a good place to live.
Murfreesboro is right near where our good friend Templeton Thompson lives, as a matter of fact.
Yep, she was at the Horse Bonanza last year and sang for us. She did a nice job. And we actually did a live. Joe Harper, who's one of our clinicians this year during the Saturday night event, did a freestyle reining routine as she sung live in the center of the ring. It was a special moment.
Oh, cool. That is very cool. Well, thank you again, Patrick. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Glenn. I appreciate you and all that you do for the horse community. You have a great day. Stay warm.
All right. All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Bye-bye.
Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn DeGeek here with Coach Jen, and we just spent our time learning a lot more about the Southern Equine Expo. Rose, I'm sure, will be back next month with the regular retail show that's usually in this spot on Tuesdays. We are going to be back here live tomorrow morning with, of course, Jamie, hopefully, if she's feeling better. And we'll have the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia, so don't forget to give us a call for our first Wheel of Trivia tomorrow morning. And of course, you can find Rose and the gang at Equus Now, title sponsor for today's show, over at EquusNow.com. Well, now, Jennifer, you spent some time putting together a replay because it was so popular. We got so many comments on this interview last week, and it was kind of on an odd day. We did it on a Thursday right after coming back from the holiday, which we're normally not even on Thursday. So we thought we'd replay this interview with Jim Wilson, producer and director of 50 to 1, which Jennifer put together. I'll tell you what, you did a great job getting an Oscar winner on the show. And he was such a good guest. This is a terrific interview.
He can come back on for every single movie he does.
Yes, no problem. He can mic on anytime he wants to. So JD did most of this interview, but Jennifer has produced it and put a little bit of a beginning and end to it. Of course, we're talking about 50 to 1, the story of Mind That Bird winning the Kentucky Derby. So I want you to take a listen to this, and we'll be back after this is done. So take a listen.
And now for the call of the 135th Kentucky Derby, let's go atop the stands and join Tom Durkin. in the Kentucky Derby. And it's Joyner the Dance who's racing for the lead. Musket Man has some early speed on the inside. Here's Regal Ransom with some speed as well. Beneath the Twin Spires the first time. Regal Ransom and Joyner the Dance will vie for the early lead. Pioneer of the Nile is right up there. And that's Papa Clem down toward the inside. He's now fourth. As a party, forwardly placed fifth on the outside. Flying Private is sixth. Freeze and Fire in and among horses is now seventh. Musket Man is eighth. Dunkirk is ninth on the outside. Then farther back down on the rail, that is Atomic Rain, running in the 11th position, two lengths back. And General Quarters is now 12th. Nowhere to Hide is 13th on the outside. West Side Bernie is now down toward the rail. And then on the outside, at the back of the pack, beginning to move up now, is Hold Me Back. Advice is also right there toward the back of the pack, along with Chocolate Candy, Summerbird. Advice, the last of them all, is Mr. Hot Duck. So down the back stretch run, or even well behind the rest of them, is Mind That Bird. So down the back stretch run and join in the dance. An impudent long shot leader here, 50-1, taking the field through an opening half mile that was strong, 47 1/5 seconds. Regal Ransom is third. On the outside, Pioneer of the Nile. Now Garrett Gomez asking him for a bit more. He's right there. Third on the outside, Desert Party is now fourth. Hold Me Back, fifth for the inside. Papa Clem threads his way through horses from sixth. Now Musket Man is now seventh. Chocolate Candy is beginning to come alive now, and he's eighth on the outside. Then down toward the rail, it's Advice as the field turns for home. Top of the stretch, it's still joining the dance with a tenuous lead. Regal Ransom and Pioneer of the Nile strikes the front just outside the eighth hole. Musket Man is coming hard down the center of the track, and Papa Clem's right there too. Down toward the inside, coming on through. That is Mind That Bird now coming on to take the lead as they come down to the finish. And a spectacular, spectacular upset. Mind That Bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
Well, we've got our guests on the line, and it's something that I have, well, I've never said, Glenn. We've got an Oscar winner that is on hold. Okay? And let's take him off hold. Oscar winners don't stay on hold, okay? We've got with us this morning Jim Wilson, the producer and director of the movie that we've been talking about like crazy, 50-1. It is the movie about Mind That Bird. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you East Coast or West Coast right now?
I'm West Coast.
Well, I am too, so thank you for getting up this early and joining us. I understand
No problem.
A little bit. Well, talk to us a little bit about 50-1. We're super excited about the movie and Mind That Bird. First of all, give us a general overview of the movie, the story.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. I mean, I was mesmerized, as was I'm sure millions, when they watched Mind That Bird come down the lane, you know, in 2009 on TV. I was watching on television. And I just couldn't believe this little horse, you know, squirted through and won by almost seven lengths. And I said, oh, my gosh, if there's more of a story to it, here's half of it right here. Because I just, that was one of the most amazing races I'd ever seen in my life. It really was. So then I spent some time with three cowboys, basically. Chip Woolley, the trainer, Mark Allen, and Leonard Block, the owners, down in Roswell, New Mexico. And I found them to be just very rich, colorful guys. And I said, if I've got a story about three cowboys, you know, out of Roswell, New Mexico, who bought a horse up in Canada, who won a Canadian championship, and are going to go ahead and trailer their horse cross country to the Derby, you know, and take on the best of the best, I want to be a part of that. Because I love stories. I'm a real sucker for underdog tales. And and this was one. I didn't have to make up stuff. I mean, these guys met in a bar fight, 25 years ago, and I said any movie that starts with a bar fight or history does, I said I'd love to be a part of it. So I just thought it was full of color. Love this little horse. I met Mind That Bird down in Roswell. Spent some time with him. He was a character as well. So it had all the elements I needed for a great film. Yeah.
Okay. Just you telling the story of these guys is a movie, and it screams movie. I think you're very lucky to be the first one to get in there. Have you always been a horse person, or are you just
a
derby
person? Not always a horse person. I mean, like, my parents were nice. They used to saddle me on some little thing at a birthday party, and that wasn't much. But in my 30s, you know, I produced a couple films. I did Dances with Wolves and Wyatt Earp, and after a couple of westerns, even The Postman, I really had an affinity for horses. I loved to get out in the wilds and be with these animals and stuff. So when I finally could afford a piece of a horse, you know, I bought a horse about 25 years ago. I've had a kept a small barn here on the West Coast. So, you know, I was just a kind of a normal city kid until I made those films. But then I fell in love with the West a bit and horses. And so that's how I really, really got, you know, acclimated to and wanting to have a racehorse. So
you kind of started a racing barn then.
Yeah, I've had a racing barn out here based at Santa Anita, basically, or the West Coast, wow, Southern California hub since 91. Yeah, bought my first horse actually with, well, it was funny, I bought it in auction on the telephone, and I had Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner with me, and we were in a trailer in the snow up in Lake Tahoe. It's it gets a thing, bid higher, because they just wanted to see me get this darn horse. So I got my first horse with those two in 91. They didn't own it with me, but they got me to bid that high.
Okay, so obviously they were filming the scene where they went up to Kevin Costner. The Bodyguard is one of my all-time favorites. And you're filming the scene where the kid is on the boat and it blows up, and then you have to get out of there, and then all the lines are cut in the cars. Oh, my God, the drama of that scene. Since you brought it up, because you talked about Whitney and Kevin, two of my favorite people on the planet. I've had a crush on Kevin Costner since I was about 13 years old.
Uh-oh.
He's one of my favorite actors of all time. I know, it's terrible. And you have done so many movies with him. You guys actually own a production company together.
Yeah, we've had a company since really the late 80s. And we've made a lot of fun films, and some have worked, some haven't, but... yeah, Kevin and I just a lot like brothers and have enjoyed it. But we did have one horse together named Proud to Be Together, and ran a couple races, won a few, and he just wondered why we weren't going to the Derby. And that kind of ended the relationship in terms of horses. I had to explain to him that not all horses go to the Derby. So that was, but we've had a company a long time, yeah.
And then you make a movie about a horse in New Mexico that goes in a two-horse trailer across the country with a bunch of cowboys and men in a bar fight that go into the Derby. Why can't Kevin Costner get to the Derby? He doesn't
get it. He didn't get it.
I love it. I love it. So of the projects, you mentioned Dances with Wolves, one of the classic movies of all time. It was such a game changer in movies to have that sweeping picture of the Native Americans and him being, you know, a soldier going across the country. And Glenn actually hasn't seen it, but
I'm
going to have a spoiler. I got to have a spoiler alert I know. He's the only person on the planet who hasn't seen it. But I've got to ask a couple questions. Just to make me, the horse girl, the animal lover, feel better, can you please tell me, and lie to me if you have to, that Two Socks came back at the end? They didn't really kill him.
Well, of course Two Socks wasn't killed. Please, my gosh. I sat here and we dealt with two great wolves. I don't think I'll deal with two wolves next time. You know, Kevin insists we use two real wolves, and I said, Kevin, why don't we get a hybrid, you know? Give us a Prius, something that's not so difficult to work with. But that didn't happen. So we dealt with two wolves, and they probably pushed me 2 weeks behind schedule.
Wow.
Just because he insisted they actually take the bacon from him and chase him down and grab his boot and do all that they do. But, no, we used two wolves, and actually they were extremely well-trained, so they were easy to get to do what we needed to do.
Yeah. Right. And I get it. And I've read all that. I've studied it. I'm a huge fan of the movie. But, you know, they go through the part where, you know, you think maybe he's shot, and then there's a wolf at the end that starts howling. And in my heart, I know that was Two Socks.
Well, I think you're not
right.
Wrong, okay? You're not wrong, Jamie. No. There he is right there. He took a little bit of recovery, took a little bit of the fall and the winter to get him okay. But by the time they were leaving winter camp, he's howling up in that rock enclave. You're right.
Oh, my God. You just made my year.
No, he's fine. He's okay. In fact, he had a beautiful litter of pups, and he's in good shape.
You're awesome. You're awesome. And obviously, you know, we would be remiss being a horse radio
show to not talk about Sisko, probably one of the greatest movie horses in my memory. My husband actually owns a buckskin because Kevin Costner rode a buckskin in that movie.
Wow.
It's the manliest color of a horse.
Yeah.
What happened? I don't want to talk about what happened to Sisko in the movie because I'm still upset at you about that, but let's talk about what happened after. Did Sisko go on to live a happy...
The Sisko went on to live an extremely happy life down in Texas, and he was purchased from us from a family in Texas who had a whole family of daughters who rode, and I forget if it was outside Dallas, but anyway, yeah, he's had a great life down there, and we do check up on all the horses, and this one is crazy. Well, you guys can we can talk about it a little bit, but this horse that we have named Sunday Rest is a horse that that plays Mind That Bird. But anyway, Sisko is fine. Sisko's had a tremendous life down in Texas and ended up being a little more of a jumper than we had thought. So he jumped down there a little bit, and it was fun, yeah, but a beautiful buckskin he was, yeah.
Yeah, just gorgeous. Well, I'm glad that he ended up having a great life. Tell us a little bit, okay, let's get back to Mind That Bird, the horse that plays Mind That Bird. Did Mind That Bird do any of the acting in the movie, or was he just... archival footage, what happened with that?
Yeah, no, Mind That Bird, the real Mind That Bird lives in Roswell, and it's very sweet because, as you know, most of the stallions go on to breed and all of that, but he's a gelding. So they brought him back. Mark Allen has him actually at his home down in Roswell, and they built this mini Churchill Downs grandstand with the twin spires and all that for him down I'm not kidding, down in Roswell. So when you first pull up, you go, oh, my gosh. So this horse is pampered and loved, and he scampers around. Mark's got a track right there as well. I think a three-quarter oval that they exercise him on, and he's living in a lap of luxury down there. Yep.
Wow. You don't hear that very often, that somebody lives in Roswell and is living in a lap of luxury.
Luxury. I thought of that.
Well, I'll tell you, Mark's built a beautiful, beautiful ranch down there, and Leonard Block, the co-owner, lives across the street. So it's fun. I mean, they walk down their driveway and go have a barbecue together and a drink and shoot the breeze about what's coming up in the next season and breeding and what they're going to be doing. Yeah.
People can visit him and
see
him. I mean,
people visit Bird all the time. They've got a big sign about half a mile away pointing them to Double Eagle Ranch, and it says, come visit Mind That Bird. And they take care of everybody. I'm not kidding you. They knock on the door, buzz the buzzer, and they've got peppermints ready, and off they go. So
that's really
Bird,
cool.
I have a question I want to ask about because it's something that you guys really haven't brought up much, and it was the other story of his win that year, was Calvin Burrell. We really hadn't heard a whole lot about Calvin till he won the Kentucky Derby that year. Is Calvin Burrell going to be in the movie?
How can you replace Calvin Burrell?
That was my question. What actor is going to play Calvin Burrell? I can't even think of it.
Well,
not even Kevin Costner could pull that one off.
No, Glenn, so what we did is we did honestly think we were going to have to find somebody. So we're in Hollywood, and I went down to Del Mar and Hollywood Park, and we talked to some jockeys and stuff. But the more we did that, the more it became apparent that only Calvin could play Calvin. So finally got a hold of Calvin back there and talked to him about the script and what the scenes were that involved him. And he was a little hesitant to begin with. Actually said, I'm not sure if I should be doing this. I mean, obviously he was writing, and it's hard because you got to figure out a schedule. And I spoke to his agent, Jerry Histon, a number of times. And so finally he said, yep, I'm on board. And I'm really happy he did. Because Calvin is, he's a one-of-a-kind guy, and he was something else. It was his turf. He said, you're in my home now, boys. So the minute we landed in Churchill Downs, we filmed there for 2 weeks. He was the man. I mean, he took me through the jocks room, and we do scenes in the jocks room, and we're out in the paddock and recreating the moment of the paddock, and I'm on the track with him on our horse and recreating part of the race. And so Calvin Burrell is there's nothing quite like Calvin. So
you really didn't need him. You really didn't need him to act, right? I mean, he just played himself, and Calvin is Calvin. You're not gonna you get what you get with Calvin, right?
You get what you get, but I'll tell you, son, Glenn, one of the hardest things to do is to play yourself. If I really pulled you out of your studio and put some lights on you and said, Glenn, just be Glenn. Just just walk down here and deliver this line to me. You'd be shocked if you could say ABC. I mean, it's, I've had actors you think can play themselves, and they can't do it at all. So the fact that Calvin could do Calvin is great. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, so tell us about the horse you guys used in the movie, Mind That Bird Stand-In.
Yeah, so Mind That Bird Stand-In. So Mind That Bird does have a cameo in the film. So you can, it's kind of be a fun little trivia piece for those who know horses and all to look for Mind That Bird. So the real bird has a real scene in the movie with the lead actors. So he's in the film. There's two shots of him. So I'll let you know that. The horse we finally found, his name was Sunday Rest. I alluded to him earlier. We looked at probably almost 400 head to really find, because I'm a nitpicker when it comes to these past movies and saying they got to look a little more like these real animals. So if you're doing a real story. So I had, you know, obviously the photos and video with me, and there's a gentleman named Bill Lawrence up in Washington who finally found him in Calgary. So he was at the Stampede, and he was working on some horses, and he said, I think I just got a little guy. So he sent me some tape and photos back and sizes and all of that, and we found him up there. But it wasn't after rejecting a whole lot of horses, too. So I finally took the picture. I sent it off to the doc and to Mark Allen and had them sort of just double-check me and make sure. And I said, has he got a personality? Because Bird really does. Bird knows he's a little different. And so this horse, he said, is full of it. And he's a three-year-old thoroughbred who had raced four times in Arizona. And not very well, but had four races. And so it was perfect. Right color, right, you name it. So it didn't have a little tiny star on his head. We had to stencil in every morning. But he was good in the makeup chair, so that was no problem. So
that's
Sunday
awesome.
Rest.
So,
I love it. And instead of nine horses like most of these movies used, we used one horse.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
Sunday Rest does racing. Sunday Rest does the comedy. Sunday Rest, you know, has the conversations with the actors and stuff. So it's basically short of a couple scenes where we just put a horse in a starting gate or something in the distance. It's all Sunday Rest plays this on that bird.
Well, now you didn't really.
That's good as a horse person, I look for the differences in the horses. There's a horse movie where there's a gray horse that goes around and jumps a course, and there's a dang different gray horse in every scene. And it's like, I'm not going to be able to know the difference between a dapple gray and a flea bitten gray.
Right.
So that makes me actually feel better that I can just relax. Now, do you have a lot of whinnies in the movie? Like, you know how sometimes
we hate
you
fake whinnies.
Yeah. The
answer
is both. I do have a lot of whinnies. I happen to be a fan. If they're good whinnies, I like whinnies. And I tell you, when you have a whole, well, they're where I think they ought to be. So it is a movie. You have some dramatic license. But, there are some whinnies, and I think you have to listen to. When you're in a sound room, and you've got the wrong whinny, it doesn't work. But I think if you have a communicative horse, and a lot of these things do, I mean, I've got a horse here at my ranch that talks nonstop, whinnies nonstop, whether it's food, whether it's this, whether it's that. So some horses are obviously, you know, very vocal and some silent. So,
the difference. You know the difference. You know that horses have different whinnies. It's the producers that have a movie with horses in it, and they play the same whinny. And the horse is not even moving his mouth when the whinny is happening. You know the difference, so that makes sense.
I'm a stickler on that. I mean, go back to Dances with Wolves, and when you hear all the horses and the way they move on the ground, and I did all that sound work, everything, and won an Oscar for the sound work. So, you know, I know the particulars of horses and how they move and all of that. So I would love people to watch this and listen to this and say, you know, find me something that doesn't work. That's okay. it's hard.
I got a question though. Is it a documentary? What kind of movie is it? I don't think I know.
It's a full blown motion picture, buddy. This is as big as they get. This is not a documentary.
Okay.
It's not a short. This is a full blown theatrical extravaganza. Yep.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I'm super excited about it. Where are we going to get to see it? Do we have to request it at our local theaters? Is it going to be
exactly
wide release?
What's happening? This is years ago in the 80s, 70s, and 80s. They used to do a rollout release, meaning you open in a part of the country and it continues to move. And that's exactly what we're doing. So The film was not acquired by a studio. Sometimes what will happen is you finish a film and a studio picks it up and it's in 3,000 theaters a month later. And that's, you know, and the majority of films are not picked up. They're just made by studios today. So they know their dates a year ahead of time and they make these, you know, $100 million pictures and slam them in the theaters and that's that. So this is painstakingly made by ourselves. We had five investors in the movie. So it's independently financed. And, you know, it's been 3 years in the making. And so we're releasing it in theaters starting March 21st. March 21, it opens throughout New Mexico. So it's statewide. Then we go to Texas and Louisiana, and on we go. So we're going to hit hopefully all 50 states and take our time with it. So there's, you know, a website you can check out, 50to1themovie.com. It gives you all of the release dates up to where we have them so far. So, no, it's a big theatrical. You'll see it in your local theater, and we'll be down that way. We don't know those dates yet. So we're set through, you know, March 21, and we've got certain dates through April 18th. We're up in Kentucky, and then we'll see about Florida and other places. But we'll get to you.
All right, I'm in Arizona, so you better make sure you go west a little bit.
We're going to go west. Don't worry. Oh, you're in horse country. So this is, no, yeah, I think it plays well, obviously, in California, Arizona, Florida, a lot of your horse states. So, yeah, you betcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited. It's been a pleasure talking to you, honestly. But I have to ask one question before we let you go.
Yep.
What is it like when they call your name and you've won the Oscar, and you have to go walk up on stage and give a speech? What was that moment like?
Well, you use the word surreal. I mean, it is pretty strange. There's a pool of people out there, and you hear your name. And it was strange that evening because it was a 3 hours plus you're there. And you've heard a lot of your friends' names be called, and yet some were, you know, some were not called. So you're never quite certain about any of this stuff. Yeah, you go with the flow. I mean, it does kind of stun you, and yet you have to run up there and go. And so I had to go up there, and so Kevin and I are jumping up the steps, and there's Barbara Streisand standing with a couple of Oscars, and she hands them to you, and you realize, first of all, they weigh about five times what you think they do. I mean, they're just so heavy. So you kind of grab one, it kind of grounds you. I think it's a smart idea. And then Kevin says, go first. You go first. Kevin says, you go first. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh. So you stand there, and the good news is the light's pretty blinding. So you're looking out at an audience. You know it's a billion people, whatever the heck it is. But, you know, truth be told, you're so darn excited. You just want to get a few words out. I'm glad I couldn't see my parents and others that were there, my family, because I probably would have cried there. But, yeah, it's pretty great. So you get up and let it out. So and you always say something a little foolish or trip on yourself, but we're human. That's okay.
I have goosebumps even hearing you say that. And finally, the final thing I have to ask you is, what was the name of the horse that you bought while you were sitting in a trailer with Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston, which is just surreal in itself?
Yeah, you know, hang on a sec. Oh, my God.
Come on, you can do it.
No, I will get it. I will. And guess what? The horse never raced.
Oh, really?
No, the horse never ran. The horse, you know, had bullet in the morning, bullet works, Santa Anita, and hang on. There you go. I got it. Thank you. A pint and a prayer.
Oh, no.
Do you like it? There, that's
I
how,
like
that's
that.
That's how Jim Wilson started. Yeah, there was a trainer by the name of Jude Feld. And Jude was out here, and he said, I got a horse for you and at auction and a pint and a prayer. That was it. And
I still would have been on
like
a horse.
Trained like a monster, and we never quite got there. So,
oh, my gosh. Well,
that's it.
I swear I could get stories from you all day, Jim. I hope you'll come back someday and talk to us, maybe talk
Absolutely.
To us after this movie wins your next Oscar.
There you go. Well, I hope people support it because it is. We have a lot of fun, and it's a romp. It's rather different than a lot of the horse pictures you've seen. It's a lot of fun because these characters are fun, and they really are. These owners and Calvin and the horse, and so it doesn't take itself maybe quite as seriously. So I think that's fun. It'll be good for racing, I think. And, we'll see what happens. Out we go.
The whole the story is a movie, so just to be able to see it played out, and these guys look like they're a lot of fun. Even when they were at the Derby, I remember seeing those guys. I'm like, those guys party. I can't wait to see this film. Jim Wilson, the director and producer of 50 to 1. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks,
thank you, Glenn. Keep up your good work, guys. All right.
So, Chip, you got any long shots for us?
Oh, you're kidding. That's all I've ever got.
We don't get more horses to train, we're going to be out of business.
Hey, this guy, Kid Cowboy's a goner.
Thanks, man. See my ass. Oh, you
won't. You ever need another trainer, someone to watch your back?
I'm out at that.
He's a 2-year-old thoroughbred. James, mind that bird.
I don't think he's what you're after.
Let's give him a try.
Okay. You want this horse.
Obviously.
Mr. Allen, your horse qualified for the Derby.
The Kentucky Derby.
We got one last shot.
Well, that was a lot of fun. It was fun to listen to it a second time, too. I hadn't heard it a second time, and he's just a neat guy.
What a great storyteller. Really is. Not, you know, beyond movie maker, yes, but a great storyteller, too. I could, like Jamie said, I could just sit there all afternoon and listen to stories.
Yeah, and, when you watch the – you definitely have to go and watch the trailer for the movie. Maybe, Jennifer, you could post it on Facebook again. But it is a great movie for the – or it's a great trailer because it really – when he said romp, I think that was a good word. It's sort of Smokey and the Bandit style. I think you had the good analogy there, Smokey and the Bandit style. This is not Secretariat.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to – I mean, I'm sure it's going to have its poignant moments, but I don't anticipate this being a warm and fuzzy, tear-ridden flick. I imagine this is going to be fun and hijinks and silliness and trouble. And, yeah, I'm just so excited to see it.
Definitely. I am, too. I am very excited to see it, and I know Jamie is as well. Well, hopefully we'll be back tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. Hopefully Jamie will be back if she's feeling better, and we'll have the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia for you. Give us a call at 347-637-3238 at 9.05 a.m. Eastern Time, and be one of the first ones to play the Wheel of Trivia here on Horses in the Morning. Maybe we'll have a little contest tomorrow for the caller with the coldest temperature wins a prize automatically. You know, maybe we'll give them a pair of gloves or, you know, something like that. What do you think?
There we go. I think that's
we'll find a good
challenge.
We'll find a good warm prize to give them for the coldest temperature of a caller tomorrow morning. I think that'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, you know, the rest of the week, Thursday we'll have a recorded show for you. Friday we'll be back, and you want to get your ads in for Really Bad Ads, get them into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put Really Bad Ads in the subject line and copy the entire ad and paste it in the email. You want to find the app, you can find that in the App Store at iOS or Android. Just go to the App Stores and search for Horse Radio Network. I did have somebody that was having a little trouble listening to the live feed this morning. If you're having trouble, sometimes it buffers, and there's no way to really avoid that. So if you're having trouble on our website, if you go to horsesinthemorning.com and click on the live button, maybe try going to Blog Talk's page instead. Go to blogtalkradio.com/horsesinthemorning and try listening that way. You might have a little better luck. And we do post that all the time on Facebook. So maybe just try that link instead. It might get you a little better time. All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow morning. Have a terrific day. Stay warm. Keep those horses fed and keep the water flowing. Your hats or your mitts or 12 layers.
Break out the cocoa and toast.